Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Rhett Miller is playing solo acoustic at Helsinki Hudson in Hudson, New York tomorrow night at 9 p.m., and at Iron Horse in Northampton, Massachusetts on April 24th at 8 p.m. Miller is the lead singer and guitarist for Dallas's hard-charging rock and roll quartet and alt-country band, The Old 97s. In addition to his 9 studio albums with The 97s, he's released 4 solo studio albums and last year's The Interpreter live at Largo. This June, his first self-produced solo record, The Dreamer, will be released on his label, Maximum Sunshine Records. This song, Out of Love, is from that new album.
There is a real possibility that there's really something wrong with being all like that, but I'm up to no good. There is a strong suggestion, baby, without question. In all likelihood, I am up to no good. I'm only home. Sad, sad song. Well, you can keep my fortune, throw it into the ocean. No matter what you say, I'm drifting away. Hold on to my memory. You can't hold on to me. No matter what you say, I am drifting away. I'm only home. Sad, sad song. There is a real possibility that there's really something wrong with being all like they could. I'm up to no good. There is a strong suggestion, baby, without question. And all like they could. Good. I'm only home, away from home. I'm only all there when I am gone. I only miss you when I'm with you. I'm only happy when I'm singing a sad, 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 sad.
That's part of Out of Love from The Dreamer, Rhett Miller's new album, which will be released in June. Rhett Miller joins us now. Rhett, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hi, Sarah. So nice to be here.
It's great to talk to you. With The Dreamer, which will be out released in June, you have returned to your album naming trend of the something.
Boy, the last record I named Rhett Miller, eponymously, and I wished after the fact so badly that I had named it The Rhett Miller.
You could do a re-release maybe in a while.
Maybe.
How did that album naming sort of trend start with you? The Interpreter, The Believer, The Instigator, and now The Dreamer?
You know, The Instigator was the one that started it, and it was the middle break of a song off that record, and I just loved the idea of being sort of a character. You know, I've spent so long being in a band where I'm, you know, one quarter of a larger entity, and so to make that first solo record and now the subsequent solo records, it sort of emphasizes to me when I'm making them, you know, my sort of autonomy in the process, which I'm unused to after having spent so long as part of a democracy.
Do the different nouns that you title the albums, that you title presumably yourself in the albums, are they representative of different stages in your mind that you've been in when the albums came out? Are you more of a dreamer than an instigator now?
That's funny. I had not thought of that, but you're probably right. When I made The Instigator, I was going out on a limb and making a solo record apart from, you know, my somewhat beloved band or whatever, and there I was sort of instigating this sort of new thing that seemed dangerous at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when The Believer came around, I was, you know, sticking with it and continuing and believing in this the feasibility of making these solo records in addition to keeping my band together, which is kind of an unheard of thing to be able to do. And then now I think there's something about this record, The Dreamer, where I've produced it myself. I'm releasing it on my own label. And I've spent all this time working towards this, and here I am now getting to live my dream.
You just mentioned the next thing I wanted to talk about, producing it yourself and having your own label. Why did you want to do that? Why was that important to you to take on this time?
I flirted with the idea for a long time, but I came up in the era of big major labels, and I'd always been on one. You know, it was Warner Brothers, and then Sony, and then, you know, whatever, on and on, Universal, and I took some solace in the idea that they knew something I didn't know, mm-hmm. and it's only in the last couple of years, really, that I've realized they don't. Nobody does. You know, we're all in this sort of new Wild West era of music where it's so easy to make it and it's so easy to disseminate it, and it's not as easy as it once was maybe to get people's attention because there's so much noise out there.
Right, or to get people's, not to be crass, but money.
Sure, sure. And in some ways the two are synonymous. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember I used to get so angry when you know, I remember in Dallas, journalists would say, "You want so much to be famous," and I used to think, "Well, no, not really, but I do want to keep doing this." You
right.
know, and I think that in order to keep doing it, I have to achieve a certain level of notoriety, and I don't intend to assassinate anybody. So this is what I got, you know.
You released last year, also on your label, The Interpreter, Live at Largo, which was a lot of covers. How did you decide what songs to do there?
The Interpreter was all covers, but it was, some of them were so obscure that they don't seem like it.
Okay.
It was some of my favorite. There's two Bowie songs, and you know, he's got a place. I'm in the Hudson Valley, and he's got a place not far. I think he's kind of close to Woodstock. And
yeah, Rhinebeck, maybe?
Yeah. I keep wondering if I'll ever run into him. He's my childhood hero. I'm mm-hmm. not sure if I even want to, but he's somebody I really admire. And, you know, as are all the artists that I covered. Some are more obvious, you know, the Kinks and Ray Davies with Waterloo Sunset, which I think is maybe the greatest song ever written. And Bob Dylan, I did a song of his. And, you know, some of them are more, like I said, more obscure songs that meant a lot to me. You know, growing up, there was an Aztec Camera song that was the first song I ever played in a high school talent show. And, you know, some songs that maybe people didn't know as well. And there was an Elliott Smith song, which I really wanted to include because I knew him through that Club Largo where I recorded the album. It was a little Hollywood listening room that was the epicenter of a scene in L.A. for a long time. And John Bryan played every Friday night. And Elliott would get up all the time, and Fiona Apple was always there, and in addition to all the comedians that came through, which it was just it was a really sweet, fun place. And I recorded that album, The Interpreter, there in the last month of its existence. It has since moved into a 300-seat room, and while it's still very cool and there's a great scene around it, it's
right.
not the intimate little place it once was.
Yeah, the new Largo you hear about a lot on comedy podcasts.
If you don't
know L.A., but you do listen to those, and I'm always like, yeah, Largo, I've heard of that a lot.
Oh, yeah, and I know Paul F. Tompkins does a bunch of stuff mm-hmm. there, and about all those people now, actually.
What made you move to the Hudson Valley?
Well, when my wife and I discovered that she was pregnant, we looked around L.A. and felt like we would have wound up, you know, out in Reseda or Thousand Oaks or something. We had been visiting here because her brother lived here, and we just fell in love with it. You know, we fell in love with the beauty of the area and the sort of the bucolic nature of this setting. But, you know, you're still 90 minutes away from the biggest city in the country, and which it's so great for me to be able to, you know, drive to New York City and do a gig or a meeting and then be able to come home and be in my little house with my kids and my 3 acres.
A few years ago, you co-produced an EP for the Spring Standards, which I bring up because I used to do theater in the Adirondacks with James Smith of the Spring Standards.
Cool.
And they're touring with you later this year on the West Coast. You co-produced their EP. Do you foresee doing production work on other musicians' albums in the future?
Well, I never really would have thought about it so much, but I've loved doing it. I love doing their record. I love doing my record, and you know, the reason I never thought I would be a producer was because I don't have the kind of expertise to be an engineer necessarily.
Right.
And I'm not the kind of instrumentalist where I can really play every instrument and do all that kind of stuff. But I do really love making albums, and I think I have good instincts when it comes to choosing songs and coming up with arrangements, and most importantly, hiring people that are really good. For instance, on The Dreamer, I hired Heather Robb from the Spring Standards to sing backing vocals on 5 of the tunes, so she's all over this record, and I'm a big fan of their band, too. It was a blast to get to produce them.
Yeah, they're good. When you aren't writing your own music or recording your own music or playing your own music, who are you listening to?
Well, I do love the standards. I love the head and the heart. There's a band called the David Wax Museum that mm-hmm. I've become enamored of. And, you know, and then I, like a lot of people, I've got my short list of things that have always meant a lot to me that I go back to sort of for comfort. You know, my David Bowie and my, there's a band called The Wedding Presents that I really love from Leeds that I've gotten to see quite a few times, even recently. And, you know, I do spend most of my time, though, listening to what I'm working on or writing a new song or, you know, playing with my kids. It's just not enough hours in the day to discover the new music like I used to.
Right. How autobiographical is your music, your lyrics? Are they telling your story or stories?
Well, I've always been careful not to let them be specifically autobiographical because I don't ever want to get, you know, trapped into thinking that people are reading my diary.
Right.
It would be impossible to write songs like I do without there being, you know, an enormous amount of autobiography in at least the subtext of the song or the driving force behind the writing of the song to begin with. You know, there's a lot in there that's me, and probably it's all me, but fortunately I don't have to do all the things that the characters in my songs do because some of the decisions they make are really terrible.
You're playing at Helsinki Hudson on Friday solo acoustic, which of course you've done a lot, and you've also mentioned you play with, you know, you have the Serial Lady Killers you play with the old 97s. When you don't have a band, how is prep for the show different?
I love to feel out a room. I love to get a really good idea of the kind of the audience that's out there with what they, I mean, I do that maybe with a band as well, but it's so much easier to do when I'm by myself and I can change things on the fly. I can tell stories in a way that I'm never able to with a band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I try not to do too much of that because I've always believed in the old adage, more rock, less talk. But I love it. There's something really just so basic and fundamental about standing there with the guitar, and you know, that's the way I write all the songs. When I was a little kid and I started falling in love with music, it was mostly folk music that I was really excited about, you know, and folk singers and somebody just standing there and people paying attention, you know, forget about paying money, but just paying attention. It's so hard to get that, and I love it. I'm grateful for the, you know, for the opportunity to do it for a living, but it is really fun when it's just me.
It's been a real treat for me to speak with you today. Thank you for taking the time.
The pleasure is all mine.
Rhett Miller is playing at Helsinki Hudson in Hudson, New York tomorrow night and at Iron Horse in Northampton, Massachusetts on April 24th. Visit rhettmiller.com for more information. His new self-produced solo album, The Dreamer, will be released in June on his label, Maximum Sunshine Records. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. We'll end this segment with one of the songs Rhett mentioned in the interview, his performance of Waterloo Sunset from the album The Interpreter, live at Largo.
This is only the greatest song ever written by any human being, and I'm going to sing it for you. God, I wish I'd written this song. God, I wish I was a human being. Sorry. Dirty old river, must you keep rolling, rolling into the night? The people so busy, makes me feel dizzy, taxi lights shine so bright. But I don't need no friends, as long as I gaze on Waterloo sunset, I am in paradise. Every day I look at the world through my window. Chilly, chilly, it's evening time. Waterloo sunset.